I'm Mark Purcell, and this is the Book Club at 91.7 WVXU and WMUB. You may recognize Mark Harris's byline from his book Pictures at a Revolution, Five Movies and the Birth of the New Hollywood, which was a New York Times Notable Book of the Year, or from his writing with Entertainment Weekly. His book Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War, is now in paperback, and Mark Harris is here on the phone to discuss this work that looks at five fascinating directors and their adventures in World War II. Mark Harris, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You seem to be wrapped up in the movies here. Pictures at a Revolution really looked at society as a whole and how those five nominees for Best Picture in 1967 were kind of a reflection of how life was changing. But what brought you to follow these five well-known directors through their World War II adventures?
Well, I'd always been curious about movie history, but World War II movie history was a time that I had kind of found myself consciously avoiding. I would look at these great directors, John Ford, George Stevens, John Huston, William Wyler, Frank Capra, and I would see a gap of several years in their resumes, you know, between Mrs. Miniver and The Best Years of Our Lives for Wyler, or, you know, why didn't Huston do very much between The Maltese Falcon in 1941 and The Treasure of the Sierra Madre in 1948? And I got more and more curious about that gap, which turned out to be their years in service, right after or around Pearl Harbor. All five of them accepted officers' commissions and walked away from Hollywood right at the height of their careers to go serve as either propagandists or documentarians during World War II for 3 or 4 years.
It's fascinating in the beginning of the book where you lay out Hollywood had a bad reputation in Washington before Pearl Harbor, and that changed. You said, you know, there was one attitude on December 6th, 1941, and an entirely different approach in Hollywood come December 7th, 1941. Explain what that relationship between Washington and Hollywood and why it was so trying at that time.
Well, in many ways, it was really antagonistic. I mean, Hollywood was viewed by Washington as a kind of hotbed of communism and socialism. It was viewed as corrupt. There was a lot of mob influence in the Hollywood labor unions. And it was also viewed, and this is, of course, what really changed, as interventionist. A lot of isolationists, both in Congress and in the country, saw Hollywood as kind of an upstart industry run by Jewish American immigrants who were trying to kind of artificially hype up the terror in Europe as a way of dragging the United States into a war that it had no business in. And of course, right after Pearl Harbor, that completely changed. You know, Hollywood had turned out to be right about what a menace Hitler was, and the isolationist movement collapsed, and suddenly Hollywood's reputation was not only elevated, but Hollywood was necessary, because the War Department really felt that it needed the skill of Hollywood filmmakers to, in effect, sell the war to the American public.
Well, you point out that the people who made newsreels were journalists, and the War Department knew that they couldn't really control what the journalists were going to report on or the images that they were going to do, and that's why another reason that Hollywood seemed attractive to them.
That's true. I mean, the whole book really proceeds from this, you know, counterintuitive moment that General George Marshall had, where he felt that the story of World War II that was going to unfold, first of all, he felt, and this was really forward-thinking, that it absolutely should be documented on film, because that was how information was getting to people. And he felt that it would be better served by narrative filmmakers, by people with Hollywood experience, than by journalistic filmmakers with newsreel experiences. It would be as if Washington turned, you know, after Iraq and Afghanistan, not to embedded journalists, but to Steven Spielberg and Catherine Bigelow and Martin Scorsese, and said to them, please explain this war to the American public.
Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War, the book by Mark Harris, who's on the phone with me from his home in New York. Five Came Back. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. As I was reading the book, and it's great how you weave the story of John Ford and William Wyler and John Huston and George Stevens and Frank Capra all together, because their threads, of course, you know, in Hollywood, they were the directors of the day. But they each went different directions when it came to the service. Frank Capra, he stayed in Washington, D.C., but with Stevens and Houston and Wyler and Ford, they all went off in different directions. And really, this provides a great look at the war through their experiences because you're in practically every theater.
Yeah, it kind of astonished me how much I could cover just by following these four guys around. I mean, Capra was the sort of hub of the war effort in terms of filmmaking. He was in Washington, and he was really in charge of the overall effort, and so I got to tell the Washington story through him, but Ford was in Hawaii and the Pacific Theater and at D-Day. George Stevens was in North Africa and at D-Day and at the liberation of France and at the liberation of the camps. Wyler flew bombing missions over occupied France and Germany. Houston was in Italy and in the Aleutian Islands. So I got to kind of go all over the world with these guys in the book and experience through their experience many, many different aspects of the war.
It seems you had a lot of access to some great materials for research. You got into some of the uncatalogued items in the Stevens Library. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head here. But you had a lot of material to work with, Mark.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate on sort of both sides of this story because on the Hollywood side, all five of these directors had their papers archived, and most of them turned out to be really good savers. I mean, they're not just their papers, but their journals, their memos, their notebooks, their date books, their war diaries, their letters were all in archives. And on the other side of the equation, the Library of Congress and the National Archives have preserved many of the wartime documents. So I was able to kind of construct a narrative by putting those two things together, you know, from both the perspective of the directors and the perspective of the War Department.
It seems that each of these men were, to some degree, looking for an adventure. I mean, I'm thinking of John Ford, you know, primarily. He was all gung-ho to get into the midst of things. But it's interesting to see what each of their motivations were. I mean, they all had different reasons for wanting to be part of the war effort.
It's true. I mean, they were older. They ranged from their mid-30s to their mid-40s, so they did not have a lot in common with the most of the men who fought the war. You know, Wyler said he flew, you know, bombing missions with the 10-man crew of the Memphis Belle, which resulted in his famous documentary about the Memphis Belle, and he felt almost paternal about them. You know, they all had different reasons. Capra was a Sicilian immigrant who really wanted to prove his Americanism. Houston, in particular, loved adventure. Ford, who was the oldest of the five, had always felt bad about not serving in the First World War and also really wanted to go to sea, to be on the water. Stevens had a really kind of pure motive to serve his country and to, as he put it, be on the 50-yard line of history. And Wyler was the only Jewish director of the five that I write about and had grown up in a part of France that was sometimes occupied by Germany and had many, many relatives there who he was trying to get over to America. So the war was very personal for him.
Well, John Ford filmed the Battle of Midway, and that documentary was, as you write, the war's first great chronicle of a battle. Stevens went to Dachau, and you indicate he was the most emotionally affected by his wartime experiences. But who, from your perspective, which of the five do you think was most affected by what happened in their life during World War II?
I think Wyler and Stevens were both profoundly affected. I mean, I write about this in the book, but you know, Stevens was the first filmmaker into Dachau in May 1945, and much of our visual understanding of the atrocities of the Holocaust, even today, comes from what Stevens and his men filmed in the weeks after they got to that camp. And, you know, I can't imagine what it was like for him walking in there with no real knowledge of what he was about to see, to instantly take it upon himself to document what he found there so thoroughly that it was in fact used as evidentiary matter during the Nuremberg trials. That changed Stevens profoundly. He had been a really acclaimed director of comedies and light escapist films before the war. He never directed another comedy after the war and said he couldn't. And Wyler was changed because he was actually the most seriously physically injured in the war. He lost his hearing while filming the Italian coast in an unpressurized plane. And so many people know, of course, the great movie he made, his first movie after the war, The Best Years of Our Lives, which is about three returning veterans, one of whom was disabled. Wyler himself was a disabled veteran, and of course that changed his life profoundly.
Mark Harris's book is Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War. You can learn more about it at WVXU.org. And, you know, speaking of the best years of our life and the other movies that came after World War II, I mean, I'd love to go back and look. You know, bring up so many great films as I was reading. It was like, I want to go see that again. But I was wondering whose filmmaking was most affected by their wartime experiences. Could you see how someone's movies were affected by what happened? I'm not just talking about content, but style.
Yeah, I think you absolutely can see it. I mean, and in very different ways that were true to the personalities of each director. I mean, in some ways, the person whose career was most profoundly affected was Capra, because he didn't really have a career after World War II. The first big movie that he made after the war was It's a Wonderful Life, which we now, of course, think of as a kind of annual classic, but was at the time a failure, a financial failure that was a big enough failure to derail the independent company that he had just started after the war with Stevens and Wyler. And he was so demoralized by that he just basically stopped making movies. I mean, he made five or six more films before he retired, but nothing of note. So that certainly affected him. I think the biggest stylistic change definitely is Stevens. You know, to go from making things like Swing Time, and you know, he's someone who started with Laurel and Hardy shorts in the 1920s, mm-hmm. and in the 1950s became this very, very serious director of movies like A Place in the Sun and Shane and Giant and The Diary of Anne Frank. So it's almost, when you look at his pre-war and post-war careers, as if you're looking at the work of two different very good directors.
You know, there are some of these men who were wanting to seek recognition for what they did in the war, but I find it curious that they really hadn't shared their stories. Why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think it took you writing this book, Mark, for some of these stories to come out?
You know, in some ways, I think they themselves saw the war as an interruption in their careers. You know, it probably took some of them several years before they realized that their war work was part of their overall work. And you know, many, many veterans of World War II had different relationships to talking about that war. I mean, some of them liked to tell kind of heavily embellished war stories. Some of them really did not like to talk about it. And it's interesting, you know, when you look at someone like George Stevens and his very, very profound experience at Dachau, he did talk about it very articulately, but for the most part, not until 15 or 20 years after the fact. It took a lot of them. And Ford also, you know, there's a big difference between the slightly gung-ho stories that he told soon after the war and the somewhat more reflective version that he told in some later interviews. So their relationship to the war and even their relationship to how much they wanted to think about the war changed over the years and decades after the war.
Five Came Back, A Story of Hollywood and the Second World War by Mark Harris, looking at five of America's most celebrated directors in their times in World War II, John Ford, William Wyler, John Huston, George Stevens, and Frank Capra. You can learn more about the book at our website, wvxu.org. And Mark Harris, thank you for being on the Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks for having me.
Right now, on the Book Club at 91.7, we're asking you, what book have you read over and over?
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm from Northside. I think I've read The Baron in the Trees by Italo Calvino more than any other book. I can't say why, it's just something about the feel, the atmosphere that he creates. You know, it's kind of a fairy tale, but it's also definitely for grown-ups too. But I find it's kind of comfort food for me. I can go back and read it again and again, and each time I find something new, I find I enjoy it more each time I go through it.
My name is Elizabeth Truitt, and I live in Marymount. I have to say, it's got to be the Harry Potter series. Actually, it's one of those that is an easy escape for me. I can pick it up in any order and it doesn't matter. And Rowling has just obviously such an incredible narrative that kind of makes you escape and you can leave whatever you're doing and jump into that and then jump right back into what I'm doing.
My name is Christopher Scott and I'm the author of The Secret Wisdom of the Earth, Lonesome Dove. Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry is the only book that I finished and then immediately reread. I've read it probably four or five times. To Kill a Mockingbird is another one that I've read probably 15 times. And Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy is another one. That's a book that I think you have to read several times to really get the feel of the language and just appreciate, you know, the genius of Cormac McCarthy.
Hello, I'm Kate Lawrence from Mount Washington. I'm a big rereader. I like to read things over and over again. I always pick up the Sherlock Holmes stories. They're some of my favorites. I started reading them when I was probably 10 years old, and I still pick them up today. I never get tired of them. There's so many of them, you can always pick a different one, so you're not always reading the same story over and over again, but those are some of my favorites.
Hello, I'm Michael Link from Northside. One of the books that I've read over and over and over again is by David Benioff, who is currently well known for scripting the Game of Thrones TV series with his partner, but it's called City of Thieves. And this book, it was one of the ones that I probably wasn't going to read, and just on a lark I picked it up, and I couldn't put it down. It's historical fiction for people who don't think they like historical fiction. It's very fast-paced. You can tell he's a screenwriter by training. It's very cinematic. It's funny, but engages you right at the beginning and pulls you through the siege of Stalingrad, and it's fantastic.
Hi, I'm Gara from Mount Washington. I have read Hero and the Crown by Robin McKinley over so many times. I'm on my second copy of the paperback. So in about college, I had to replace it. And I'm still on that copy, but just full of adventure, again, strong characters, very strong female leads, and just a really comforting read.
You're tuned to the Book Club at 91.7.